You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Monday, everybody. Happy Memorial Day. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where, of course, we talk about the Indiana Pacers, as always. My name is Tony East. I'm one of the lovely hosts of this show. I cover the team for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News and the Fieldhouse. And today is normally the day with me and Adam, my co-host, doing this together. But Adam is traveling for Memorial Day and forgot his mic. So, third episode with just me and Ro. Get excited. And I was going to wait to do this. I was hoping to, of course, have my show without Adam be another media thing this week with someone in the media to talk Pacers. But we had to change our plans on the fly because of Adam's no mic. So instead, I'm going to pivot and start my draft talk because I have an article coming out about a player I kind of like for the upcoming draft, and Elijah Hughes, and I'm going to do a whole segment on him. But really, I want to talk some draft philosophy and strategy earlier, and then I guess going in the future, me and Adam, or just me, can pick some players that the Pacers could look at in this draft. Now, first of all, this episode, of course, is brought to you by Built Bar. Don't forget to check them out at builtbar.com with the code LOCKEDON to get $10 off your first order. Delicious protein bars. Anyway, the draft is interesting for the Pacers this year. For the first time since 2014, when they dumped some salary and got Luis Scola, they traded their first-round pick back then. They're going into the draft without their first. So in 2016, they traded their first. However, they had it going into the draft. They just traded it for Thad Young that day, right? So they typically have it going in, and the Brogdon trade means this is the first time since then that that is not happening. However, given their cap situation and the way the league is going, I think one strategy element that I want to talk about for this draft is trading back into the first round, because they only have the second round pick. They're only going to have a pick in about the 40s. And like me and Adam talked about last time we spoke last week, you know, second round picks are not very good. You know, obviously they're low value assets. They're still an asset though, because they're about what me and Adam figured out looking back at some past drafts, somewhere between a 15 and 20% chance of being something useful. Now, that something useful is very, very rarely your Isaiah Thomas's, Nikola Jokic's, right? That's your exception to the rule. You hit a home run in the second round. But, like, you know, Edmund Sumner falls in your 15%, right? You get at least a rotation player out of your second rounder. That's a success. And the Pacers, honestly, have done better with second-round picks than first-round picks, not in terms of, like, total impact. Miles Turner alone carries the load there for first-rounders. But, like, between Joe Young and Sumner, and Alizé's okay, and Ike Anibogu was a noble swing, and Niang, not on the Pacers anymore, but looks like a rotation player. Like, their second-round picks have been overwhelmingly solid for the last couple years, right? So they're only going to pick in the 40s this year. Typically, what they, you know, if you look at the Sumner and Ike picks, those are the two second, and Alizé, those are the second-rounders of the Kevin Pritchard era. With Alizé, you have a guy who got a lot better every year and grew a lot as a player, and with the other two guys, you have guys who were injured and fell. So that's something to look at for the Pacers' draft strategy, and I'll talk more about that in the second segment. But really, I want to talk – sorry, got to get back into trading into the first round. So this is for two reasons. One, obviously, is because you get to pick a better player, and, you know, having one of the first 30 picks or whatever, first 20, is great. And there's a – you know, like – You can look, I don't know, it's just better, right? I don't have to explain it. I was about to say, like, you can look at historic trends and just see kind of the drop-off between the 25 to 30 range and the 30 to 30, 31 to 35 range. And some of that is that, you know, the stigma of being a first-round pick unlocks minutes for a player by default. But still, those guys just turn out to be a little better. But the second reason is a cap-related reason, right? So second-round picks, you have to sign. And like, every player from the draft counts against the salary cap, but, like, someone you pick in the second round, even if they're on a minimum deal, they count against the salary cap, where someone you draft in the first round immediately takes a cap hold and doesn't require an exception to sign, right? So if you wanted to sign a second-round pick, first of all, minimum contracts can only be 2 years in length. So if you want to sign a second-round pick to a three-year deal, you have to dip into your mid-level exception or your biannual exception or something to get that guy for those years. Actually, not your biannual, that's only 2 years. You have to dip into your mid-level exception to do that, to sign him to a three-year deal. And With first-round picks, you don't have to do that. They automatically come with their own cap hold, which is an inherent cap benefit because, you know, the Pacers, for example, right, they're probably not going to spend their full mid-level, especially if the cap falls. They want to use as much of that as they can on either Justin Holiday or whatever veteran contributor coming from other team. So using a portion of that to lock up their second-round pick on a long-term deal is not ideal because it's less spending power to do whatever with your veterans, whereas if you are able to get into the first round, suddenly you still have that full mid-level and you have a better pick. Now, you have to give up the assets to get there, and this draft isn't super... I mean, this draft is weird, right? Because the second round, like the top of it is not very good, but there's still a lot of solid role players in this one, so maybe they could swing in for a solid role player. So you have to trade up to get it. Do they have the stuff to do it? Yeah, but without using future picks, it's kind of hard, right? So they have... obviously their first round pick on this year, and from that Thad Young trade, they traded their second round pick to the Nets, and I should have had this up in front of me before I started, but they have that outgoing. I think it's 2022 is the year it finally becomes fully unprotected, so they do lose a second from that, but they have a bunch of incoming seconds. They have a 2021 second from Milwaukee, 2021 second from Utah, 2022, 25, and 26 second rounders from Miami, right? So they have five extra seconds in the door, plus their own second in 2021. So if there's a way to swing some sort of, here's a bunch of second rounders and maybe, you know, throw in Edmund Sumner or something, I don't know. I don't know if I would, what I would do or would not do. But anyway, some way to swing in, to sweeten a pot at just enough to make a team. It would have to be a late first because no one in the top 20 or even 25 is going to dump it for a bunch of seconds unless they something sweetens the pot or like the Pacers take some salary or something. It's a three-teamer. Who knows? Either way, if they can use 4 or 5 seconds to get into the late first, that might help their salary cap situation and help them get another useful-ish player, you know, at low expense. That helps their and helping their salary cap situation is critical as – you know, the salary cap's about to be very dynamic, and it'll help them bridge into the future where, yeah, their salary cap sheet's pretty set, but they don't, you know, they only have Goga and Aaron Holiday as their young, promising first-round picks. Getting another one in the pipeline is great, especially because it gives them less pressure to nail their 2021 pick, which they're about to have a lot of next year if they don't snag a good rookie in the second round this year. So I think there's a lot of merit to trading into the first round. It's pretty hard to do without giving up something substantial, though, which is why it's going to be difficult, but, I mean, they swindled the Suns into the 32nd pick last year. And reminder, the 32nd pick, so the second pick in the second round, two after a first-round pick, they got for 3 first-round picks last year. So you don't think the team with the 30th pick, two picks higher, would be willing to maybe do 4 or 5 seconds? I don't know if the Pacers would be willing to do that. But, I mean, maybe that's close to the value you're looking at in that instance. So, yeah, I think it's a worthy strategy worth considering for both the cap reasons and, of course, getting a better player. But they don't know. The thing coming, something I'll talk about in the next segment, strategy-wise, getting a good player now is going to be interesting and hard to use because they have a loaded rotation. But before we talk about that, it's time to talk about Built Bar. We're going to do this all month. It's because Built Bar is the best. It's the best-tasting protein bar ever. It's kind of like a candy bar, like a chocolate bar. They have a bunch of amazing flavors. Some of them are nut flavors and some of them are nut free, but you know, they have fruit bases or candy-ish bases or peanut butter bases. They're delicious. They're soft. They're easy to chew. They're all covered in chocolate and they're great for the health conscious guy. You know, you can lose or maintain weight and it's a delicious treat to do so. I have been squeezing them in between meals. When I had them, I finished the pack that they sent me and they were delicious. I'm getting my own using my own code. They are low calorie, but still high protein and low on all that extra stuff that makes other protein bars unhealthy. You can go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, all caps, one word. You'll get $10 off your first order. So go check out Built Bar and use the code LOCKEDON for $10 off. Back to the draft, though. This is interesting, an interesting draft for the Pacers because, well, obviously the stuff I just talked about, they don't have a first-round pick, makes everything interesting. But as has been well-documented, of their rotation players, only one is an expiring contract, right? Just Justin Holiday. And if they retain him, which I'm sure they would like to do because he's been very helpful this season, they already have, I think, 13 guys under contract. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. This is terrible. I'm counting live. 7, 8, 12, so the departing play, with Justin it is 13, I was correct. The only two departing players in that instance would be Jakarr Sampson and Alize Johnson. So, drafting a player, they're not going to play at all. They're basically not going to play. So, there's two ways for me to slice it here. You're either getting a guy who you think can immediately contribute in injuries. Like, this guy, you know, if whatever, X, Y, Z, like, okay, I don't have to explain this. Remember in Brooklyn earlier this season, there was that game where they, Nazmi Trulong was the backup point guard and played like 20 minutes. And Alize Johnson played 9 minutes, right? They had, Miles and Domas were out because Goga and Jakarr started. I remember that game in Charlotte. And I think Brogdon was hurt and McConnell was hurt. So Aaron Holiday started and Sumner was hurt. He had a broken hand. So that, those kind of things happen. Like once or twice a year, that will happen. And if you're a contributing team, you can't afford to be giving away games. The Pacers won that game where Naz played a ton of minutes. He played pretty well. Alize played pretty well. Anyway, if you're a good team, you might want your guy you're sticking in that situation to be good. Nazmi Trulong is 27. He's good. There's a difference that he's a two-way player, not a draftee, but still, I mean, that kind of stuff is important. So pathway one to think about with the Pacers draft strategy is, you know, pick someone older who can, you know, no rookie is going to come in and immediately be ready, right? The ball is bigger. I think that's under-talked about, by the way. I'm not actually sure if this is true, but I'm almost positive that the ball gets bigger between college basketball and pro basketball by one size. It's like 29.5 and then 30.5. Anyway, the three-point line gets longer. The players are faster. Everyone's stronger. The ball getting bigger is such a small note compared to the rest of those things. But it's a thing. Anyway, I think it's a thing. Anywho, so a lot of the times, immediate contributor is a farce. That is not really a thing that can happen. But compared to other rookies, the guy can help you now. He has some sort of skill that is translatable right away. In Aaron Holiday's case, he was really fast, so he could kind of break down a defense and hit pull-up threes right away. Remember that game he checked in against the Hawks right away? He was helping the team win immediately. Now, he had a ton of cracks in his game. He still does, but you know, he showed in those instances, yeah, he can help. Goga this year, same thing. Ton of cracks in his game, but in those instances where Turner and Sabonis, or Sabonis, whatever, either one was hurt, you can throw in Goga and get just good enough defense and useful enough offense. You know, again, a lot of ways to go. It's harder to get that in the second round. Those two guys were around the 20th pick. We're talking about the 50th pick right now. But anyone who can, in your spot, you're playing them maybe, probably not even this much, 100 minutes on the season, can just not sink you there. That is one line of thought. And I think that has a lot of merit because it's a second round pick. It's really hard to hit the big time prospects late. But that's the other path to think about, and we've seen this before in the Pritchard era, especially in, 2017 draft. I hope that's right. They picked Sumner and EK in the same second round. They bought the pick to get Sumner because they liked him, right? So EK Anibogu, for those who don't know, he is, I want to say, on the Erie Skyhawks or Bayhawks or whatever the Hawks G League affiliate is now. Anyway, the Pacers selected him in the second round in 2017 out of UCLA. He was a stud defender in college and then got hurt. So he was projected as a first-round pick. He still went pro. He tumbled a bunch. Now, he still got his year pro, so he got guaranteed money out of it. It was worth it for him to do so. But, you know, the reason he fell so far in the draft is because of that injury. And the Pacers said, well, you know, this guy was a stud before he got hurt. And getting, you know, when he was really raw. You know, he could really jump and dunk, and he was a really good around-the-basket defender. But really raw skilled everywhere else. So they were really taking a big swing and hoping that they could develop him and that the injury caused them to get first-round pick potential in the second round. It did not work out. However, the Sumner pick was the same thing. He tore his ACL, same thing. They said, this guy used to be projected late lotto, you know, mid-first-round guy. We'll scoop him up way late here at pick 52 and see if that works. And that time it did work. And that second-round philosophy, where you're getting the project guy who may or may not have been injured. In that case, for those two guys, injuries contributed to their fall. But you take the guy who is a big project who is still available. You know, he's really young and he can do one or two things really well, but he's raw, right? Can you develop that guy to be something useful? And that's really hard. Like, Mo Bamba is an extreme example because he's still at number 5, but you know, Mo Bamba was really raw going pro. It's going to take him a while to be awesome and be whatever he can be at his apex. But, like, those guys, when they show the raw skills to be really good, they're super valuable. So it takes a long time. Mo Bamba's gone through 2 years, still isn't awesome, but I still think he could be. You know, those kind of guys are sometimes available in the second round where you can swing and say, okay, if this guy puts all the things together that we think he can, this is who we want. So the reason that guy would be valuable is obviously because his ceiling is huge. But number two for the Pacers is because they have all these guys set in the rotation, right? We just talked about how low minutes we're thinking their pick's going to get, maybe 100 minutes all season. It's going to be more G League minutes, right? You might want a raw guy because he's not going to be able to play the first year anyway. Why not look more for the future? Or even, I didn't talk about this, I talked about trading up in the first round, or even trade it away and have more treasure trove of second-round picks in the future just because there's no way they're going to play this year. You can just sign two minimum undrafted guys and not waste the pick. You know, that's not a crazy option that late in the second round anyway. It's pretty well documented that Terrence, I think his last name is Davis for the Raptors. That's embarrassing that I have forgotten his last name. I'm almost positive that's it. Asked not to be drafted so he could pick his team, right? So there's some stuff going on with players not liking to go that late even. So you have to really like a guy and have a good fit there. But I think that, it, you know, if they could find a guy who fits both, could be a massive project and is an immediate contributor, that's great. And I kind of want to talk about a guy who vaguely fits those perimeters, although no one fits those perimeters who's going to fall to 50, but I'll talk about him in a minute. But those are the two strategies I think they could look at. So the draft is far off, though. We have to get through the rest of the season and postseason, whenever that may happen soon. Whenever that may happen first, not soon, although it could be soonish. Me and Adam will talk about all the reporting going on and what Spencer Dinwiddie leaked, hopefully on Wednesday this week, along with some other stuff. But now I want to get back to the guy I said could vaguely fit those parameters. His name is Elijah Hughes. He went to Syracuse, and he's a kind of flawed prospect, but I like him, and he kind of fits some of the parameters I just talked about. But first, same as last week, we're talking Blinkist again. If you don't know, Blinkist is awesome. It's one of the ultimate life hacks, and it's hard to find time to sit down and read anymore, especially, you know, now that states are reopening, you're going back to work, you're commuting more, you just have less time in the day. But there's an incredible app that solves this problem, and I would highly recommend it. It's called Blinkist. It's super unique. It works on basically wherever you can digest information, phone, tablet, browser. It takes the best takeaways and information from nonfiction books, smashes it into smaller sound bites up to like 15 minutes that you can read and listen to and get all that information. Successful people are using it. 12 million people are using it right now. It has a huge library, and it's growing every day. You should try it out. You can go to Blinkist.com/MBA to start a 7-day free trial there. That's Blinkist.com/MBA for a 7-day free trial. You can also save 25% if you sign up there. So go check it out. So, Elijah Hughes, I spilled my beans before the segment with his name. Syracuse, wing 6'6, all ACC team in 2019-20. So I'm going to do defense first when talking about Elijah Hughes. And that is because that was the hard. I watched some tape of this guy. I was reading a lot of people's draft articles, and his name was stumbled into one of them, and I looked into him and was like, wait, what? Anyway, I have a lot of regrets about starting with Syracuse because I never want to evaluate a Syracuse player again. Defense is impossible to evaluate for these guys because, for those who do follow college basketball, you already know this, but Syracuse is notoriously heavy 2-3 zone on defense. Almost 100%. Like, basically 100% outside of, like, the fast, super lightning, quick transition opportunities where you just are picking up a guy flying down the floor. So that makes it really tough to evaluate his defense. So Elijah Hughes is 22. He just finished a redshirt junior year at Syracuse. He is going pro for sure. He said he's staying in. In some interviews I read, his freshman year, he played at East Carolina, though, and then transferred and had to sit out that year, his redshirt year. But at East Carolina, he had some man-to-man possessions that were not awesome. You know, he's a good scorer, so 19 points per game as his redshirt junior this year. All-ACC team led the conference in scoring. But all that to say, you know, the younger guys who are offensive-minded, they can often struggle on defense in general, but they get caught watching the ball because, you know, they have a lot of one-on-one skills. They play one-on-one a bunch. Growing up when they're developing, they get caught watching the ball on a D, and even in man-to-man, you could see it with Hughes sometimes, or he would just lose his man, and he couldn't, you know, he would be slow to recover because of that, or he's out of position, whatever, the other team would score. So zone kind of helped him because In zone, you do, you don't totally turn and face and put your backside to the weak side of the floor, but you're looking towards or at the ball more often. It kind of helps. I mean, you have to cover space instead of a player, which is hard, and if the other team is prepared for it, they can set up offense to mitigate a lot of the stuff zone gives up, you know, threes from certain areas, stuff like that. But it helps with guys like Hughes, who now I can get a little bit more into him instead of just saying his defense is hard to evaluate, but it's mostly bad. Not bad. That's mean. It is rough, but he's super athletic. He's got a decent wingspan. He's rangy, and his offense is awesome. If you just pull up his basketball reference page, and of course this is where I started before I watched some games, he only shot 42.7%, but he shot pretty well from three. He shot 36% from three in his time at Syracuse, and he took seven a game. Over half his shots in his time at Syracuse were threes, and that high of a three-point attempt rate is awesome, and that hurts his percentages, right? Because now half of his shots are these shots that he hits about league average percentage, which on that volume, that percentage isn't awesome, but on that volume, it's pretty good. Anyway, that's what's hurting his percentages. He shot over 50% on two-pointers both of his seasons at Syracuse. It's just the volume makes those numbers kind of misleading. So, yeah, he has a pretty diverse skill set on offense, which I like. So he can pull up from three pretty well as kind of skirt his way into some open spots from beyond the arc. That's why he's able to get up so many attempts. And Syracuse was in the top, I think, 60 in three-point attempts this season for NCAA teams. I like 300-something. That's pretty good. So they like to get him up, and that was good for him. But he's really shifty with the ball. He's speedy, he's athletic. I talked about that. And that's what really popped to me when watching him is, he can get into the paint and break down a D a little bit. And he was, pretty heady with hitting tough shots and finishing at the rim. And I liked that about him. And he pulls up really fast. Like, he knows right away when he thinks he's got a small advantage, he'll just bury it in your face. That's why he's such a good scorer to me. Sometimes to a fault where, again, these guys are always dominant when they're in high school and they get to college and they're not used to having to give it up more often. So sometimes they force it, and Hughes is guilty of that quite a bit. Actually, I think that was one of his biggest faults, that if the Pacers were to get him, they could have to work through is, he'll drive and just not create any separation at all and still chuck up a shot. And creating separation is a bit of an issue, and that's part of forcing it. But I still think because he's able to hit tough shots, that will translate well if they're able to get it under control to taking the right shots, whatever NBA team he ends up on. He might not even get drafted, but I think he's, a lot of mocks have him, 40s, 50s. I think he will. He's pretty good. Something else I liked about him on offense is their point guard on Syracuse, his name is Joe Girard, was pretty good, but a lot of times they said, this is our most athletic ball handler. They would just let Hughes take it up and initiate a little bit, and especially in transition when he would do this, because he's athletic and speedy, he can change speeds pretty well too. He could get into the teeth of the D just enough to make them all break down. And he's, I'm not calling him like an awesome passer by any means at all. Like, he's not going to, we talked about this. We talked about Jalen Rose a few weeks ago on the show, right? Like, Darren Collison could only make simple passes, one pass away, where Brogdon can throw a skip pass to the opposite corner. That's the difference in their passing. Brogdon's much better despite not having crazier stats with those passes. Hughes is definitely more of the Darren Collison passer, and it's probably even less so than that. Once he breaks down the D, he will find the open man. It's the man's going to be right next to him or very obvious for him to hit that. Now, again, that is useful playmaking skills, and being able to break down the D at all makes you a valuable asset if you can do it at the NBA level. It's just you can't rely on him right now to be that setup guy. So I do like his offensive skill set quite a bit. Good enough free throw attempt rate. It's not awesome. It's not going to jump off the page at you, but it's pretty good. So, again, he's getting into the D, drawing that contact there. So he is diverse as a scorer. He can kind of pass. He does cough it off a bit much, but I think he's a really nice offensive player. And he, being the guy on your team means you're drawing the best matchup on the other team. I think he's a good offensive player, and much more positives on offense, I think, than negatives on defense. Now, the problem, again, is his defense is so hard to evaluate. It's a massive question mark. But that could be a good thing. He could turn out to be awesome and athletic, and super unlikely, but it's certainly possible. So because of his defense being such a question mark, I almost want to put him into this in-between, impossible in-between. This doesn't exist between project and immediate contributor that I talked about last segment, where if you really worked on, you know, because his offense is solid in those whatever 100 minutes, not even 100 minutes that he might have to play for you, he can help you enough on that end to keep you in games and not get you killed. Whereas defense is a growing project because you have to teach him a lot of man-to-man skills and, you know, make his head on a swivel. But Dan Burke can, you know, make you and I good at defense. So it's certainly possible that he could somehow split that line between prospect and immediate contributor. Now, that's a fake thing. That's basically impossible, but that's why I vaguely think he fits that box. And even if I'm wrong about his offensive diversity translating a little bit, and his defense is really rough, if he turns out to not be able to learn man-to-man very well, he's just sunk. But I think he could be a good NBA player. Maybe not good as in like a starter or anything, but a rotation-level guy who can be a micro scorer off the bench, that's a useful guy. So I kind of like him. I don't know if he'll end up being my favorite prospect, but he's who I started with, and I'm never going to evaluate a Syracuse player unless they're Carmelo levels of good ever again. So yeah, draft stuff is kicking off here. I'm not sure how long it'll last, but we'll see. You know, if the season news of returning comes back soon, maybe we'll start talking about that more. But maybe I'll do like a prospect a week or something if I can figure out how to fit it into segments. So yeah, Elijah Hughes, number one, and some draft philosophy stuff. Let me know if you disagree with any of my philosophy thoughts or my assessment of Hughes if you watched a lot of college basketball. Don't forget to check out Blinkist and Built Bar. That is all for today's show. Hope you guys have a great holiday, and we'll see you on Wednesday.